Hey everyone, welcome to The Survival Show Podcast. I'm David, the founder of Ultimate Survival Tips, and your host for today's show. In our last podcast, we covered vehicle disaster safety, especially during the winter, and how driving your vehicle is probably the highest risk threat you'll likely face on a regular basis. Then we discussed how you can significantly reduce your chance of having an accident or ending up in a vehicle-related disaster situation through the use of 7 vital prevention strategies. So today we're going to wrap up this 2-part mini-series by discussing everyone's favorite topic, gear, and more specifically, how to put together a get-home bag, everyday carry kit, and vehicle emergency kit, and why you need these in your vehicle when you travel, as I welcome back my friend and yours, author and the founder of Nature Reliance School, Mr. Craig Cottle. Craig and I will break down what a get-home bag is and is not, and why you must have one. We'll get into why your vehicle emergency plan and survival kit needs to be simple, scalable, situational, and seasonal. Then we're going to share with you a checklist of every vital item that we carry and why. Then we'll share with you our top 3 vital kit items that every vehicle must have that will eliminate up to 80% of the most probable and common vehicle failures that people experience while away from home. Then we're going to give you a super simple hack that will allow you to keep emergency water in your vehicle year-round and prevent it from freezing even in very cold northern climates. We'll discuss the importance of thermoregulation, morale, signaling, communication, security, hydration, supplemental power, and how to go to the bathroom if you're stuck in your vehicle, in traffic, or late at night in your sleeping bag while camping on a cold night. And before we're all done, we'll share with you 5 vital checks anyone can perform in 3 minutes or less that could prevent an accident or road emergency, and a lot more. Hey, Craig, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, David, and how are you?
I'm doing well. We're talking about winter, but at this moment, we've got a little reprieve here. It's kind of like winter came in, I don't know, like a flood or something. And so it's been actually rather mild here. When I say mild, you know, 20s to high 40s, that's mild here. How about you?
Temps not too far different from that. Do y'all have snow? Because we don't have any snow anymore.
Do not have any snow. Every morning the last week that I've woken up, the ground has been frozen, which makes it really good for walking the dog and not having to do an entire bath.
Right.
Yeah. And I know you walk with your dog a lot, right? Tracker?
Yeah, every morning. Yep. Through the woods.
All right, man. So today we're going to get into this whole kind of part 2 of where we left off last week. And we're going to get into some emergency kit essentials. We'll talk a bit about get home bags and everyday carry stuff as we go. And maybe you want to just give a little recap of last week.
Yeah, basically what prompted all this was just the tragedies that occurred in Buffalo, New York, and people got snowed in with their vehicles. And so we wanted to take a look at the people that got hung up there and basically give some options to everyone so that you've got the right things in your mindset, in your skills, in the gear that you could possibly put in your vehicle. We're going to focus on a lot of the gear pieces today and make sure that those that are in areas where wintertime travel is a thing that you must do, that you're prepared if something happens, if you go off the road or get stuck out in your way from home or something of that nature.
Good, good. Yeah, we talked a lot about mindset last week and even some tactics and just a general approach to winter and winter driving. The fact that vehicles are no joke. We kind of normalize it because most of the time we drive our vehicles without incident, but you refer to them as big bombs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, with distracted drivers and what have you, mm-hmm. you basically got people that are driving around in big old bombs. Cause I mean, they're missiles. They don't explode and what you would think typically that you see in the movies, but still, them just ramming into somebody because somebody's a distracted driver is a significant issue. And those vehicle wrecks and fatalities that come from them are increasing as we become more and more distracted.
Yeah, and unfortunately in this day and age, I mean, we have seen a significant rise in incidents of people actually using vehicles as weapons too. It's beyond the scope of this particular podcast, but I think your point is well made. So today we're going to focus on kind of like a vehicle emergency kit. And specifically, Greg, I'd love to cover just some vehicle emergency kit basics, even some everyday carry and get home bag basics. And then we can add to that seasonal specific items. So I think it's really important for us to just put this all in context. We don't want to overcomplicate this. It may sound like it's a lot and possibly overwhelming what we're going to share with you, especially if you don't have any sort of everyday carry or everyday carry bag or go bag or vehicle kit. But I just want to encourage you that we'll try to emphasize the things that are most important. And if you take those away, we can kind of keep it simple. So for me, a vehicle kit or even an everyday carry kit, even a bug out bag for me has to be simple, scalable, situational, and seasonal. Do you want to say anything about those four S's?
I think the big thing there is seasonal. I would add in, I don't know, if you could probably throw it in one of those S's to make it cool and sexy, but geographical.
Right. Yeah.
What you have in northern Pennsylvania is different than what folks have in, you know, mid Alabama, or even me here in Kentucky. So out in Utah, out in the Colorado Rockies, totally different animal than what I've got to deal with here in Kentucky. So when we get in a discussion, what kind of things that people need, we've got to understand. And that's why something like a podcast that lasts an hour long will detail different things. And you need to basically create a checklist of, okay, yeah, that makes sense for my area of geography and what I have to deal with. And there's other things that you just won't. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's never this is the list. Everybody in the world's got to get this list and it's going to work for everybody. Cause it's just not, cause everybody's in a different geography. They have different amounts in their family, whether it's a family of four or a solo person living in an apartment in New York City. It's just the people are different.
Yeah. And we all even travel. Like the way my kit is set up, Craig, since I do not live in an urban environment and I'm a pretty big homebody. Like I usually in a normal week or a normal month, I don't travel more than 20 miles from my home very often. So when I travel further, my kit gets bigger, especially in the areas of safety and security. You know, when I'm in my local area, it's not as big of a problem. And so for people too, just being aware of that, your driving habits, the distance from your home is going to be a consideration also.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that goes back to geography for sure. The simple way, I try to come up with simple ways to give answers to hard questions. And here's how I simply try to answer the problem that you're posing. If you are driving anywhere and you get as far away as you can get from your home to go to that direction, basically your second destination, can you walk home from there? And so you need to be able to, and I'm not suggesting that walking home from a trip to Florida on vacation is the right thing to do, but what I am saying is that you should be at least prepared to take care of your needs and many of your wants from your vehicle wherever that destination is.
Yeah, man, that's a good way to look at it. I mean, you're essentially suggesting and you're suggesting a worst case scenario and essentially your vehicle kit, correct me if I'm wrong, your vehicle kit is your get home bag. Like you've got to be able to move from that location home. So it's, you're talking about like a bug out bag, basically a bug out kit,
you know,
mixed in with it.
The farther I go along, I don't really care what anybody calls it. Because people get so tied into the names of these things. And I get that there needs to be that for some folks, but really the concept is more important to me than anything. And that's why I try to promote this concept of you need to be able to walk home. You can grab your get. I mean, if we say get David's get home bag, then everybody's going to get what David puts in his get home bag. And then it's not. You need to think. You need to critically think about the process of walking home from church, from walking home from, you know, you went to visit your children a state away, or you've got to walk home because you did go on vacation to Florida. I mean, get that concept in the head first. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason this podcast is two parts and each of them are 60 minutes, because this is not an easy topic to say do this or do that. It's not. You need to listen. You probably need to get a notebook out. You need to start taking notes like, yep, that makes sense to me. I dig that. And then get her done.
And that kind of fits in with what my concept is. For me, I pack more items into my vehicle the further I go, is basically the way it works out, because that's what I'm considering. If it's a normal day, I don't need to carry as much. I about don't need anything except what's in my pockets and what I'm wearing to get home. But if I head to Asheville, North Carolina, then that's a whole different animal. And you need to realize also that you need to consider who else is in the vehicle with you. All right, let's get back to simple. You want to be able to walk home, right? So I would break down vehicle kits, Craig, into two, or just what this whole topic, into two areas. And this might sound strange, but one is going to be vehicle needs, one is going to be human needs. So if we start with vehicle needs or kit items, the number one goal is to keep your vehicle maintained, safe, and functioning properly. And we discussed a lot of preventative things last week. And then we have human needs or kit items. And our goal there is to keep our body maintained, safe, and functioning properly. And our second goal is to have the mindset, skills, tactics, and gear you need to respond to a crisis that may affect your physical or survival needs. So, you okay if we just start with vehicles straight up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, point number one would be regular maintenance, and I would recommend winter and summer checks on your vehicles. And I guess my biggest point of this, point number one, is don't normalize abnormal sounds, ride, and poor function or performance issues with your vehicle. My wife came in earlier and she said, I guess I shouldn't drive the Jeep, right? And I said, not sure what you mean. She's like, well, the squeak in the front passenger side wheel. And I'm like, oh, right. We couldn't get that scheduled for this week. It's got to go in next week. And it's kind of undetermined what it is. I have a guess. But if I normalize that, you know, it could be a bearing. I don't think it's a bearing. I think it's something with brakes. But we don't want to normalize those sounds. We want to get things taken care of. And it's easy to just say, oh, maybe that squeak will go away.
Right. Yeah, that's normalcy bias. We don't want the bad thing to happen. We just want things to be normal. So we ignore some of the more simple things that we should not be ignoring. That's for sure.
And fortunately, in our situation, I have a truck. So I said, hey, the truck's full of gas. If you need to travel, go ahead and use the truck. Problem solved, right? So last week, we did discuss a lot of preventative stuff. We talked about different ways that vehicles fail, fuel issues, power issues, combustion issues. One thing we didn't cover all that much was physical and mechanical failures, like blown tires, coolant, like common stuff. Tires go, your car overheats, maybe the shocks aren't working right or the belts break, lights don't work, stuff like that. So do you have anything? I guess we'll just cover vehicle failures as we go, because we're going to cover some kit items, so we'll cover those, right? I'm hoping you have a list.
Yeah, well, I mean, two of the big things, let's just go with things that I know I use often for myself and other people, is something to jump vehicles. I've gotten away from jumper cables and now have a jumper that is battery powered because it has multiple use. I'm a survival guy, right? So these jumper boxes have the ability to jump, and they have lights, and they have extra battery power, and they can charge, you know, you can get solar energy to charge them. There's all kinds of cool things about
NoCo, man.
Yeah, NoCo is what I carry. NoCo is a real simple one to carry. It works really well. And it's basically you plug it up and push a button and you can jump a car with it. So I love that. And the other one that I've used on a very regular basis is something to pump up low tires. So, you know, my job, if you will, where I'm out a lot requires people to, you know, leave their vehicle, go out in the woods, learn some things and then come back. And oftentimes people come back with a car that's been sitting for 3 days or some variation of it. And they forgot and left one of the internal lights on, or maybe a tire is low. I pump up tires and jump a car almost every class that I have. It's just a pretty common thing. And it's pretty regular for me to see people in, you know, I live in a small town, so you can see people are having issues like that. And I've got two battery powered things that I can slap onto somebody's vehicle, get them going again, and they're on their way. So, and I've used it on my own vehicles. I used the tire thing on my truck. I think it was last week or maybe the week before last, just getting a low tire, but I was out and away, wasn't going to go to town, be out in the woods for a while, and just pumped it up on spot with a battery power that I then recharged with two solar panels that I leave in my truck now.
Those are easy fixes, and those are common.
Very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm the same way as you. I do not have a NoCo yet, but it's on a list, man. It's Santa did not see that one.
I'll send you an affiliate link if you want one.
Yeah, man. So maybe just, I think that may be the most important one because it covers a couple of survival functions also. So you want to talk about the NoCo a little bit more?
Yeah, the NoCo is just this thing, less than the size of a typical shoebox. Trying to think of something that's common. Shoebox would be a good one. You can get them at different sizes, but the one that I have is slightly bigger than the smallest because
you have the 2000? Is that what you have?
I can't remember, and I knew you'd ask, and I wish I knew what number it was. But anyway, I had a class where I had four people with their batteries down at the end of class. And I had a little one, and it just didn't have enough power to jump four different vehicles. So I ended up getting a larger one, and it wasn't that much more money, slightly larger. And so it has your positive and negative cables. It has basically an on and off button. It has a button where you can turn it on and use it as a light. You can turn it on and see how much power it has to make sure you have enough power to jump somebody. And then it also has a C plug-in and a USB plug-in. And so you can charge phones. You can charge other equipment to it if you need to. And then I have an adapter so I can plug in my Jackery solar panels right to it and charge it right back up. It's not a problem. It works really well. I've used it as a light. I've used it to jump. I've used it to charge. I've used it for all those purposes at different times. So it packs up again, smaller than a shoebox, probably half the size of a shoebox at best. So it doesn't take up much space at all.
And if you've never jumped a vehicle, you can't. If you never jumped a vehicle, you probably don't know that you could cross the wires and get a nice little spark and a shock. But you cannot do that with this unit. It's designed to be super safe and really easy to use. Did you want to say something there, Craig?
No, I do. So I had the one I had before the NoCo that I got was a cheaper model where that was a problem. And I had it at a class where somebody left their vehicle interior lights open. We came back to the vehicles, it's dead. And I said, I've got a jumper. Do you know how to use one? Oh yeah, I know how to use one. And then they promptly went over and fried it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you got to pay attention to what you're doing.
You're going to pay a little bit extra for a NoCo, but they're kind of like the industry standard now. Like,
yeah, I don't think you can beat them, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And another nice thing, this will get into some of the other tools that we'll have in our vehicle kit, but it does have a SOS signal, I believe. So if you're in an emergency, you can put it on top of your vehicle and turn the SOS signal on.
I just looked, David, and the one that I have is the NOCO 2000.
Okay. Yep. That one seemed very practical. It's a lot more charges. All around, and it can start vehicles. Here's the bottom line. If you don't live in a particularly all the time cold weather climate like I do when it's wintertime here, you're going to need more power to turn over a cold vehicle than you are one that's in a warmer climate or a warmer situation, and you need to turn it over. So it seemed to me like the NOCO 2000 was probably generally the way to go before you, you know, just start spending more money for a little bit more features.
Yeah, and I know people are wondering. I just looked it up to see their the NOCO 2000 GV70 is $199.
Yep. And I think the 1000 is right around $100.
Yeah, I don't know. I can look it up, but it's well worth the money.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. So those are two really easies that you can, almost anybody can go ahead and fix themselves, fix their vehicle that way. I don't know what kind of tire inflator you have, but I kind of standardized a couple of years ago on somebody you know, Craig, got me a kind of a starter set of 20 volt Craftsman. And so I've just continued to expand on that. And I ended up getting, I don't know, a year or two ago, the Craftsman inflator, air tool. So it does everything. You put the 20 volt battery on it, lasts for a long time. I've even pumped up tractor tires on the farm with it. So it does a good job.
I don't know how to say this, but I'm going to spell it out for the listeners. RYSEAB, RYSEAB. Tire inflator. That's what I've got.
RYSEAB.
RYSEAB. $60. I've pumped up a little bit of everything with that thing. Love this thing. You basically just attach it to the tire. You tell it what you want it to be, and you hit the on button, and it pumps it up. At Christmas, at my wife's family's house, I pumped up, I think it was 3 tires on her grandmother's car that had been sitting and doing nothing for months. Her dad asked me to do that. And so I pumped those 3 tires up. No problem. And I mean, this thing is not much bigger than a phone.
Really?
Yeah. It's not, it's,
I'll have to check that out.
It's bigger than a phone, but it's not much bigger than a phone.
All right.
It's pretty little battery power product, man. You just got to, this regular maintenance is key though. I check these things and make sure the battery's up on them on a regular basis. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's a rechargeable deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I've gotten to where, and we'll probably get into this talking about supplemental power, but I keep, it's just like flashlights were a few years ago for YouTubers, man. Every company in the world is wanting to send a flashlight to everybody. Right now, for me, I don't know if you're getting the same thing, but everybody's wanting to send me these batteries, these big old supplemental power, Jackery, EBL. I've probably got 8 of them now. So I've got one that I keep in my vehicle by EBL because I like the EBL better than the Jackery. And I basically have it set up that I regularly keep everything plugged up to it that needs power, the NOCO and the battery charger. And then I just have to look it in and see how it looks for battery, and then everything else is good that's attached to it.
That's exactly what I do here in the studio. I have, it's actually part of the set of the studio, but I have 2 Jackeries and they're plugged in to each other. And then spawning off of those, I do exactly what you're talking about. I've got my 20 volt chargers. I've got my emergency radio plugged in, and I keep I've got Japanese cell AAA and AA batteries that are keep fresh down there, and a bunch of other stuff too. But that's the way to do it. You just keep everything charged up until you need it. So I want to mention this because we're going to get, if people aren't taking notes, let's just say you're driving right now. What I'm going to do is I'm going to recount as much as I can. I'm writing it all down if I don't have it in the notes already. And people can get the show notes over at ultimatesurvivaltips.com, there's a podcast tab. Just click on that and it'll take you to the show notes blog. So you'll be able to check out the blog. The notes will, the PDF notes that you can download are essentially what's in the blog itself. So you don't have to stress about writing all these things down. I'll put links right in the description, right in the PDF and right on the blog. So you all can go over and just grab those. All right. So let's move on a little bit. And so point number one was regular maintenance with your vehicle. Point number two is be prepared for when your vehicle does break down in a worst case scenario. So like you were saying, I like how you said it, Craig, the furthest place that you would travel, can you walk home? What are you going to do? And I think what we want to do here also is maybe you're not going to do that. Maybe it's like what we're talking about. It's a blizzard. You're not, certainly not going to go far from your vehicle. Maybe you're out in the wilderness. You don't even know where you're at. So having simple gear on hand to fix your vehicle and get it back on the road, let's just say your battery dies or something like that, your tires are bad. If you can't get it back on the road, the next thing that you need to be thinking about as far as gear is getting help.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is signaling. So there's so many, you think about a blizzard or a big storm, and I keep going back to this thing that happened in Buffalo because it was so tragic, but it would be easy for people to not be able to see you. There's a couple of things that you should keep in mind as far as signaling. Signaling is just you making yourself look different than what's around you. So think about it. If you know, and I try to teach this in Wilderness Survival Course, if you've got, for example, air assets looking for you in a snow-covered environment and you build a fire and it's got white smoke, that's not going to do anybody any good. They're not going to see you. So make sure you look around in a snow-covered situation. What looks different than snow? Something brightly colored. So tie a bandana to your antenna. I keep Chem lights in my vehicle to signal to others as well. You can hang those on the windows. You can hang those inside the vehicle so that they're continuing to stay warm, which means they'll last longer. If, you know, to get them better seen, it would be best to hang them on a guardrail even or something of that nature to bring attention to your position. The key here is that if you have to leave the vehicle, leaving the vehicle unprepared is stupid. If you have everything that you need to stay alive in a vehicle and you've let somebody know where you're going and when they can expect you to return home and they have an idea of where you typically go, or even better, you have something like Life 360 that tracks you and people know where you are, then you can get help to you rather quickly. And that's critical.
And we covered a lot of that in last week's podcast. If you haven't listened, go back to check that out. Craig, I kind of made a mistake. I kind of flew right over any other gear that you may have in your vehicle to perform, you know, some sort of simple repairs. Can we just circle back and maybe hit some of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of those things that we were mentioning at the beginning that's dependent upon the people. If you know how to work on vehicles, then that's going to be a totally different set than somebody like me that's not a very good mechanic. So I have some things to limp me back, you know, zip ties and stuff like that in case something breaks. And I do carry an extra serpentine belt and the skill to be able to, on the side of the road, fix that. So those are things that are, again, common but fixable on the side of the road for somebody like me. And, you know, make sure that your spare tire is something that works. And not only it works, that you can get to it and get it off. I had an issue years ago where I had a flat tire not far from my home and pouring the rain, and I had to get up underneath my truck and try to get it off, and it was totally rusted through. Mm-hmm. There was no getting that truck tire off. And so that is a real serious problem.
Yeah, I had a similar situation. Yeah, it was bad. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I think I was coming home from Blade Show or something, and I ran over some scrap metal that had fallen off a vehicle and, ended up on the side of the road with my one tire completely trashed, and I could not get the spare off. So check that. Let me just run down through a quick list, and I'd love to have your opinion on any of this gear. Most of it is simple and small. as far as a vehicle kit. So I just have just a basic toolkit. Whatever you know how to use, go ahead and put it in there. Screwdriver, wrench, whatever. I carry a multi-tool all the time. It's amazing how many small things you can do and small noises in a vehicle you can fix with a multi-tool, duct tape, or zip ties. Right?
Yeah, for real. I love duct tape.
Yeah. Flashlight. It's a good idea. We'll talk about this a little bit more, but you really need to have a survival kit in your vehicle. You really need to have a survival kit in every vehicle, in your go bags, in your everyday carry bag, in your first aid bag, all of that. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but as we go, you need to have some seasonal items like ice scraper, brush, potentially one of those small fold-up shovels. I don't think that's a bad idea, as long as you get one that's going to last if you actually have to use it. duct tape, wire, zip ties, Craig mentioned, tire plugs, and fix-a-flat. What do you think of tire plugs and fix-a-flat?
Whew. What do I think, or what does a mechanic think? Two different things.
Well, mechanics hate fix-a-flat.
They hate fix-a-flat, but I love it because it's easy to do on the side of the road for somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. Now, I know how to plug tires, and so I have a plug kit, and I would, whenever I can, I will try that first. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know how to do that and get fix-a-flat and just deal with the angst that your mechanic does, just tell them ahead of time. They just don't like that stuff inside the tire when they take it off. So if you let them know ahead of time, it's not as bad a problem. They're still going to be upset. And you don't want them to be surprised by it, is I guess what I'm saying. So
yep.
That's an issue for them. So let them know. And again, if it's between you and getting home, then, you know, just let your mechanic be upset. And I'm sorry, not sorry about that. That it's just a matter of my safety on the side of the road or one of my family members. So I'll encourage them to use fix-a-flat every time.
Yep. I think one thing that's important with any emergency kit that you keep in a vehicle, just realize that various different weather conditions affect things. Like even if you had like a food kit, even if you have water in your vehicle, where Craig's at, it may not be a problem to carry water. Where I'm at, and it gets really cold here, it's probably going to expand and bust through the container it's in. Same thing. What reminded me of that, Craig, was just thinking of fix-a-flat. If you have fix-a-flat from like 2010 in your vehicle still, it's probably not going to work. The propellant's probably not going to work.
Correct.
So you want to keep that fresh. I mean, if it goes through a couple of warm and cold cycles, it's basically trash. So make sure you check that. You mentioned your battery booster, NOCO. Mm-hmm. Jumper cables, if you're not going to get a battery booster now, jumper cables are, you know, a good, reasonably cheap solution. Just for me, just make sure they're long enough. Some people keep fluids depending on what situation they're in. But I just want to say, if you're checking your fluids, I think, Craig, do you think it's unreasonable to say everybody should know how to check their fluids and do so regularly?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And for those that like, there's no way I can do that, I don't want to do that, then just find a mechanic that you can go to regularly and let them do it for you. But in doing it is important.
Yep. One of the most common things that is going to run out on you between taking it to your mechanic a couple of times a year and having him check it, you just need to check your washer fluid. You do not want to be traveling 30 miles between an exit on a highway when you have changing conditions and you have dirt and mud and salt and snow and everything throwing up on your on your windshield and you can't clean it off. Toaster app. I mean, I know I've got them in my truck, mostly if I need to help somebody else out. In a real survival situation where you're going to be bugging out in a vehicle, a bonus item would be a hand siphon pump. And then the only other thing I had, Craig, was just a reasonable way to store whatever gear you have. Depending on the size of your vehicle, it might be a little bit challenging. But, carrying some of these basics And again, you decide, but carrying some of these basics is really going to help you out and keep you from having to potentially call for help.
All right. Yeah, I'm a big fan of toe straps and something that I've been carrying the last few years. I learned this in a class. I taught a class for federal law enforcement. And one of the things, another instructor was there, was teaching vehicle extraction. Mm. And for urban and even rural or disaster for that matter. Because matter of fact, in the class, it rained so much, we got three vehicles stuck during class. So we got to actually practice what we've been trained to do. Because usually when I go to a class and teach like that, I'm part of a cadre. So I jump in and learn on stuff that I'm not familiar with. Anyway, long story about this, but they make shackles now that are not chains, that are not part of the webbing themselves, that make it easy to attach and reattach a toe strap to whatever it is that you want to attach it to. You know, tactical, these shackles are fantastic to be able to tow your vehicle, pull somebody out of a ditch, and stuff of that nature rather easily.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, if people have never done it with a toe strap, you normally have to crawl under a vehicle, locate a spot where you can wrap around safely, and, you know, kind of go through all that. It sounds like these shackles would make it easier to clamp onto.
Yeah, Tactical Recovery Equipment is the name of the website that I got the little shackles from. They're typically referred to as soft shackles. You can get them from all kinds of different companies. You don't have to get that Tactical Recovery Equipment. They're available on Amazon and everything. But just make sure that you're getting something rated for the strength of your vehicle or more. I use mine. Oh, my gosh. I use my strap. Not, it's rare that I have to pull a vehicle out, but it's a pretty regular thing going into the areas that I go that I have to pull a tree out of the way. And so, you know, I can attach to a tree, hit it with a chainsaw. I've actually got a big silky saw that I keep in my truck in case that, because I don't carry a chainsaw with me all the time. I got one of the big monster silky saws. Mm-hmm. And man, I can cut a tree up just enough to get it out of the way to get through an area rather quickly with that thing. So those are two things that kind of go together. You know, as far as the, I mean, with that said, I'm sitting here thinking, I've used my silky saw and my toe strap and soft shackles more than I've used my jumper in the last year. Mm-hmm. I use those, mm-hmm. but I'm in mm-hmm. Kentucky and I drive through rural areas on a regular basis.
Right.
So that is something. Do you get trees on your driveway very often?
I was waiting for that.
I bet you do.
You all don't know this, but I live on a 1 mile long private drive off of a forgotten cow path. So I'm glad you asked that, Craig, because no joke, silky saw, my battery powered chainsaw, they get a lot of use around here. Yes. The answer is yes. We do get a lot of, I was just out in the woods today and we had some wind over the last couple of days and some of the trails and paths were covered over in deadfall. So silky saws are great. Just everybody hear me on that name. Silky saws, they're actually made in Japan and somehow they developed a self-cleaning hand saw blade that kind of folds up into the handle and they're very, very efficient. I'm a big silky saw fan. Good stuff, Craig. One other thing I wanted to ask you about. How about exiting a vehicle through a window? Should people have some sort of ability in their vehicle close by to be able to get through a window if they need to?
Yeah, crash? I carry a Rescue Me, and I keep that on my keychain. So that is there. You know, if I'm in a wreck and I have to get out, it has two things on it. It has a seatbelt cutter, and it has a window punch on it. The window punch, I did a video for my YouTube channel years ago where I went to, I got some good friends that ran a junkyard and asked them if I could punch some windows out just so I could show people how it works. And man, I bet I punched a dozen windows or so, side windows, the back window, windshield, not so much. It will not bust a windshield.
Yep.
But yeah, it's, you basically take this little rescue me device. Y'all need to look this up. David, you need to put a link for this and Amazon link in there, but put it in the corner of a window, pop it, window is shattered. Now that doesn't mean the glass might not fall on you. So turn your head away from it so you don't get it in your ears or mouth or eyes, but immediately it's going to be shattered. It's going to stay in place because windows have something on there to keep them in place on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then you can knock that out or away from you and get out the window.
Yep. Yeah, they're great. And they're not big. They do fit on a keychain, believe it or not. I mean, they're like an inch and a half by maybe a half.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing.
It's like a little spring-loaded thing. There's a spring-loaded hard metal pointy thing in there. And so it spring-loads back, and when you hold it right up against the window and push the button, that little tip of metal comes out and breaks the window. So you're not like having to swing your arm and do crazy things with the butt end of a knife or anything. Okay, man. So I think now we are, those are like a vehicle emergency kit. So getting help, I would say the communication's vital here, right? We got to be able to tell people that we need help. And I think that picks up where we left off before we circled back to a vehicle kit. You had mentioned last time a PACE plan. I'm just going to let you step through this communication stuff a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, PACE plan, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. So basically
it's four levels. It's four levels of communication that you start from the P and you proceed through the E so that you have four levels of coverage and security there.
Yes, for most of us, the primary is our cell phone because that's what we use on a regular basis. Cell towers are typically available to us. The alternative is to use a hotspot with your phone or a tablet so that you can use internet access to message through social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. That's another way of communicating. And these are just suggestions. Contingency is where you, in my estimation, should have ham radio because it totally expands your ability to communicate effectively. And then your emergency is where you have flares or signal lights or something of that nature. So the piece that a lot of people don't have much experience with is ham. It's not that hard. I've got a series, I don't know why I'm talking about my YouTube channel that much this week, but I've got a series coming out where I'm straight up a doofus when it comes to technology. I'm good in the woods. I am not so good with computers and technology. I now have my hand radio technician license. I'm going to be getting my general very soon. And for those that don't know, I'm very, very poor at those skills. So, and if what I'm saying is I can do it, you can do it. And then I had hand talkies, what are typically referred to as hand talkies, what most people call walkie talkies or mobile units. Typically in the ham community, a fixed radio inside your vehicle is what most of those ham operators will call a mobile unit. I now have one of those in my truck. I've actually had it installed now for 3 weeks, and I've been using it every day in practice. And the prompt for you all, and the reason I'm talking about ham so much, because somebody's going to say, well, he's a ham nerd. I'm not a ham nerd. But I've interviewed and been parts of planning and after action reviews on the federal, state, and local level for the floods that hit Kentucky last year and the tornado hit 2 years ago. And in both instances, ham radio operators were able to communicate within seconds of the disasters happening. And in the case of the tornadoes, they were able to talk for 24 hours before any other mass amount of communication could occur in Western Kentucky, where, you know, hundreds of people lost their lives and thousands of homes were destroyed. Mm-hmm. Ham radio was up within seconds. It's a great thing. And there's a lot to it, but it's not that hard to get into it. And the ham radio community is the nicest, most helpful group of people I've been around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just looking for people to get into it. They believe in it. It's for a lot of guys and gals, it's a social thing, and it's kind of a club thing, but you don't have to get into it that much. As far as like ease, I mean, you can pick up a suitable 5-watt handheld 2-meter ham radio for less than $100 and get into it. The testing isn't that hard. When I tested for it, Craig, I did study the book a little bit before I went, but it was basically 2 or 3 hours where they went through the basics, and it was essentially a course. And right after the course, they gave the exam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a super great way to do it. So basically you would be committing maybe a morning or an afternoon on a Saturday, and those sorts of things are happening all the time. So ham radio, honking your horn, flares you mentioned, reflective road markers. Getting back to your NOCO battery booster, it has the SOS beacon, 3 short, 3 long, that you could stick on top of your vehicle, and it would travel away. Especially that 200, I think that 200 has 400 lumens, which is pretty bright, especially on a dark night. If you're caught in the snow or something like that. And you had mentioned flagging, like orange bandana. Always, if you do leave your vehicle, Craig's right, make sure you mark your vehicle, leave a note, let people know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute must. You can get strobe lights, chem lights, bandanas of brightly colored, flagging. And these are all things that don't take up much space in your vehicle and bring attention to your position. That's for sure.
Yep. Fire.
Yeah. I mean, more than anything, thermal regulation of any type. I'm a big fan of something wool, because wool insulates better when it's wet than anything else. But some of the more synthetic wool or synthetic insulators.
So can I just back you up? I just meant fire for signaling.
Okay.
So we got, I'm just walking down through this like crazy little system. Craig's like, yeah, I can keep it a lot simpler than that. But basically we had the three levels, which was, if you can fix your vehicle, fix it. Second was, if you can get help, get help. The third is, what if help is not coming? And so now we're down to the survival aspect of it, Craig, and I think it really comes down again to the survival rule of three, right?
Yeah.
You want to just take people through that, and then we'll kind of jump into like 3-minute considerations and then like 3-hour plus considerations.
Yeah, 3 minutes is blood flow and oxygen flow. You got to have the gear to take care of those needs. That's all first aid stuff primarily. 3 hours, you got to take care of your core body temperature. That's what, you know, in a sexy manner, it's called thermal regulation. You got to have something to maintain your water for 3 days, and then food for 3 weeks.
So if you're in an emergency, an accident, a crisis situation, you've done everything you can. You can't fix your vehicle. It's raining out. It's getting very cold. Might change to snow. You don't know where you're at. Your phone's not working. Nobody's coming for you. We have, now you're into, what do I do next? So 3-minute considerations. You had mentioned oxygen flow and blood flow at the basic level. I think one thing that would be really helpful to have is knowledge. And so maybe you're not that skilled at survival, at knowledge. I'm going to shamelessly pitch 2 resources that, Craig, you can, if you disagree with me, but 2 resources that you can get that you should put, again, in every survival kit, bug out bag, glove box of your vehicle, and remember that they're there, that will step you through an emergency medical situation. Best if you review them beforehand, or a survival, just basic survival stuff, is a tiny survival guide, tiny first aid guide.
Yeah, I've actually, believe it or not, you know, I write books on this stuff and wrote a sizable amount of the content in the Tiny Survival Guide, and I have it in my truck. And, you know, it's something, you know, I think of it as a checklist, right? Even those that are incredibly experienced, and I say this from a morale perspective, which is another topic if you're stuck in a vehicle, having something to read is going to be very beneficial. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. even reading through, you know, I still recommend that the guides be used as educators before you need the skills. But if you're stuck somewhere, then you can pull them out and read just to pass the time. And there might be something that, you know, it jogs your memory in there and gets you what you need to use.
Yeah, man. You covered communication. That's a, you know, that's a beginning of event situation. You can't get yourself out of it. You need help. Signaling. You covered anything else on communication and signaling?
Oh, I think that's good. I think that's a good start, especially.
Okay. Safety and security. I'm curious to hear what you have to say on that. It's always going to be in our 3-minute considerations, right? And it's actually a continuing thing because situations change and safety and security concerns kind of morph over time.
Well, some people get just their feelings hurt when I say this, but some security stuff is 3-second consideration.
Yes.
You can go down a rabbit hole. It's 3 milliseconds, crack. It's not 3 seconds. You know, come on, man. And mm-hmm. you know, people trying to hurt you happen faster than that. Anyway, I've been teaching that stuff for a lifetime. So it's one of those things where that sort of thing, from a self-defense perspective, for the security of it, could happen at any time. It can be, mm-hmm. you know, a short amount of time. So have the tools necessary to defend yourself or remove yourself from situations. The first part of that is always just good situational awareness, really good situational awareness. I just wrote an article and did a video on how to read groups of people. I've done several things with you on here on how to read people. I did one on how to read groups of people and how to read groups of people in places as well. Mm-hmm. So be following my content for that. But if you don't know how to study that, then again, the book I always recommend is The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker, how to read situations and read bad people. Bad guys don't walk up in black pants, black hoodie, sweatshirt, carrying a tire iron. Rarely do they do that. Oftentimes, they might be people that you are somewhat familiar with. So getting that taken care of is important. And then the rest of the security is being able to maintain your viability no matter what environment you find yourself in. If you find yourself in a rural area, you know, there's certain things that you don't do in rural Kentucky. You know, you don't drive up somebody's driveway and go knocking on the door in the middle of the night. That'll get you shot in some places in Kentucky, for example. You don't do that in some neighborhoods in large cities either, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things you want to be really careful.
You don't want to do that at my house.
No, man. I would dare say that as time has progressed, there's probably not very many places at all you want to do that. But even, you know, right. when I was a kid, you could walk up to somebody's house and knock on the door and say, hey, mm-hmm. my car broke down. And, you know, it's just not like that anymore. Yeah. People are generally, I would say they're more on edge and concerned about their safety than they would have been a long time ago, much longer.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yep. Safety and security. You mentioned a firearm first aid kit and everyday carry survival kit. And again, we're talking about 3-minute considerations and gear specifically also that kind of gets us back into the kits that we want to have available. Yeah, I guess that wasn't a question, was it?
I didn't get it. If it was, I didn't get it. Sorry, I misunderstood. That's my fault.
So as far as your everyday carry kit, you want to consider having some sort of a first aid kit. If you're carrying a firearm kit, I know Craig is very strong about if you're going to potentially have to stop somebody with a firearm, you want to be able to patch them up too, right?
Yeah, it's no different than any martial art. You want to be, if you're going to be doing something where you hurt people, you need to be prepared to help people.
Yep.
So for firearms, the only way to help people is to patch them up with good first aid skills first, mm-hmm. and great. Materials. Great. There's just some materials like a tourniquet that there's no substitute that even comes close to the efficiency and ease of use of something like a tourniquet. No belt, no strips of cloth is going to do as good a job as a good soft tourniquet or cat tourniquet is going to do.
Yep.
And this has been a topic while we're recording this. This has been hot topic for the situation that happened down in Florida. Florida. No, the situation that happened down in Texas. Did you see that, David?
I did not. Mm-mm.
Oh, man. Golly.
I've been fasting from media for about a week. So.
Oh, that's probably a good idea. This has been pretty rough. Some guy came in and robbed a restaurant and brandishing a firearm, and a concealed carry holder killed him. Now, it's debatable, dependent upon who you are, on whether this guy took it too far, because he ended up shooting him 9 times. It was a situation that, you know, concealed carry permit holders are hopefully trying to prepare themselves for. And fortunately, in this particular situation, the only person that got shot was the person that came in and robbed people of their money and was brandishing a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
But taking a human life is never a good thing, even if the person is a bad actor. But in this situation, nobody else got shot. But it would have not been too far out of the realm of possibility that somebody could have got shot if the firearm that he was carrying was actually a solid firearm and loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Some accounts have said that the bad actor was carrying a fake gun. He paid the price for it.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
Yeah. In Texas, I mean,
yeah,
you Texas. Might get away with that in some places, but I can't imagine somebody being in the position mentally to do that in Texas, because people down there take care of themselves.
Yep. So first aid kit and how to use it. Survival kit. You can go down the rabbit hole as far as what an everyday carry or an Altoids tin or a basic survival kit is. Just going to tell you guys that I've designed a 30-item and a 45-item kit. And I've done that through study and building my own kits for years and years and years. And then I spent about 2 or 3 years really shoring it up. Like if I wanted any situation pocket survival kit, what would I put in there? And that's what I came up with. They're called the Pocket 30 and the Pocket 45 kits. If you're interested in that, I would say those in the guides, man, just put those in your glove box. The guides kind of go along with the kits. If you don't know how to use the items in the kit, the best thing is to review the guides beforehand and possibly even get 2 kits so that you have one that's all intact and one that you've used and utilized, and they're not expensive. And I just want to tell you guys, if you go over to ultimatesurvivaltips.com and you click Tiny Survival or Kits, you're going to find all the kits there. You can also build your own everyday carry kit with our app. And I'm going to give you guys, if you're interested in that, I'm going to give you a code to get 25% off this week on Tiny Guides and Kits, and the code is SURVIVALSHOW25. That's all I got to say about those. Okay, 3-hour considerations. Thermoregulation, I think that's the big thing, isn't it, when we're talking about winter travel and preventing a winter vehicle emergency?
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly what happened in Buffalo over the last couple of weeks, is that people died due to a lack of preparation for thermoregulation, meaning they died from hypothermia because they got too cold. So that was unfortunate. And then we started talking about it, but wool insulates when it's wet. So there's some kind of weird situation where your insulating material might get wet, then that is a good thing to have in your vehicle, in your trunk, in your toolbox, if you have one for a truck. And then, you know, the best insulator out there, scientifically proven, is probably down, but it doesn't work that well when it's wet. So I'm a bigger fan of synthetics only because moisture is always an issue in the outdoors. And so that's what I'm primarily prepared for. and it works inside of a car too. So why not? So that's huge. And so the question is, what do you get? You know, sleeping bag, if you're a solo person. If you're not, probably a good insulated blanket or two. And the reason I say that is that you should be gathering together to use and feed off of one another's body heat. There's cycles of body heat, especially when people go to sleep, it rises and falls. And I've been reading on the science of this recently because we've had classes in the last year where people have gone out with nothing but a knife and had to do survival, literally with nothing but a knife and that's it. And so one of the classes, people literally had to feed off of one another's body heat the way you would do in like a SEER class or something. And so cycles, some people will start to cool down, the other person will heat up and vice versa. It's really interesting how this works when they get in the cycle together. So getting under a blanket together that's insulated will help maintain that. Some of the reflective blankets, you know, the big Mylar reflective type things will help. But just keep in mind, because a lot of people misunderstand those things, they are not insulators. They just reflect some heat. So one of those underneath an insulated blanket would be pretty good, or over top even. Either way, really, they're both going to work. But just keep in mind, they're not insulated, because I've had people pack those because they pack up so small and go, okay, if a car breaks down, this will keep me warm, and it doesn't. And,
you know, doesn't, it's not
good at all. So
the only way that's going to keep you warm is somehow. Well, I've got a couple of sacks, Craig, these emergency sacks that have a small amount of insulation, and then there's Mylar on the inside. Your whole body goes in. The problem with these little blankets is they go over your shoulders and they're really not going to do much because they're not even like really on the core of your body, right?
Yeah. So that you just need to get, I have one of those baby sacks too. SOL makes a good one, actually.
SOL makes a good one. Yep.
Yes, they do. They make a good one that I've used for years. Matter of fact, I probably need to replace it because mine's ripped and torn. I've used it often. Mm-hmm. But that thing's been a lifesaver literally for me in a couple events. But yeah, something like that. I'm a big fan of hot pockets because you can utilize them and they're not utilizing fossil fuels and causing a problem inside of the vehicle, which is a topic that we should bring up. We were talking about, and I meant to talk about this when we were talking about maintenance, but even if you have a pinprick hole in your muffler and you get stuck and you're sitting in your vehicle running the vehicle heat, carbon monoxide could kill you rather quickly. So that's something that you need to get checked on and make sure you're not having an issue like that. And if you're stopped and you're going to stay there extended periods of time, you go to sleep and you got carbon monoxide poisoning pouring in, then that could kill you. So don't let that happen. Use something like hot pockets in underneath the insulators and you'll be much better off.
So hot pocket is like a hand warmer, basically.
Yeah, right? Hand warmer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that's actually the brand name that I'm talking is a hot pocket is the name of the brand.
Yep.
That I use. It works really well.
And last thing I had for thermoregulation was fire making supplies and knowing how to use them.
Yeah, any fire kit is going to be beneficial. Three fires is a international, or anything in threes is an international symbol of distress. So three fires will help you with that. A fire will help you get warm, help people see you, help cook food if that's what you need to do, sort of thing. Help boil water if that's what you need to do. Carry a metal water bottle so you can put the snow in that and then sit it by the fire and you get water. So yeah, those are all, yeah, stuff.
Good. All right. I'm going to name off the next four or five and I'm going to let you just kind of cruise through these because we've been at this about an hour, Craig.
Yeah. So
we've got hydration. We've got morale, which you mentioned earlier. We've got supplemental power, hygiene, and food. And that's last on my list.
Yeah, I'm not seeing food being a major issue in this mm-hmm. kind of event. Now, that doesn't mean that it wouldn't help your morale to have a piece of chocolate or something, you know.
Right, right. High energy food.
Yeah, something calorie rich so that you can get some, you know, something like ramen noodles doesn't take up much space. It doesn't weigh much. You can reconstitute it with warm water, cold water. It doesn't taste that good, cold water, obviously, but you can. So that's an option.
Dude, I'm all about kind bars, specifically cashew nut with dark chocolate and cherry. Yeah.
Yeah, are we talking about what we like to eat or what we
we're just talking about food if you're going to do food.
Twix bars.
Twix
bars,
yeah, right.
Milk chocolate, well, Twix
bars. Kind bars are healthy.
they're about as healthy as a Twix bar. I don't care what kind of marketing Kind has, but if it's held together and glued like it is, then that is some sort of sugar, and that is not good, man.
Oh man.
So I'm sorry, I busted your bubble there. Kind bar. I like Kind bars too. So that's as much for me as it is you.
But morale is associated with food, and if people get into a long-term event, or if you're not used to fasting or going without food for any extended period, I would take some higher energy bars. So yeah, go ahead. Hydration, morale, supplemental power, and hygiene.
Supplemental power, we've talked about. I'm a big fan of one of these smaller battery, like Anchor or
NoCo.
NoCo, Poseidon, any of these small battery charger. And then I'm a big fan of Jackery and EBLs, man. Mm-hmm. EBL just is more cost effective than Jackery, and they use the same solar panels too. They store better in my estimation. EBL is something I can charge my phone. I don't even know how many times I can charge my phone. I know what the marketing says, but I've charged my phone bunches of times on an EBL. And again, I keep my NoCo and my tire charger pumped up full of battery power, utilizing EBL, and then just regularly just go and check and make sure that the EBL is running fine. And if it's running fine, I got plenty of power, it's good to go. If not, I've got one of the regular lighters that you plug into your vehicle that plugs right back to the EBL and charges it right back up. So it's simple.
Yep.
Simple solutions there.
I've really got nothing to add there, Craig. That's just have some backup power. And I guess maybe the only thing I would add is, if you have devices, let's just say a flashlight and your phone, you just have to make sure that you have the charging cables there also, right?
Yeah. That's a big thing. I actually just keep a charging cable for my phone in particular. It's such an integral tool. It's problematic as a society that we're tied to our phones. But, hey, it's also a very, very useful tool to know what the weather's going to do. For me to use my repeater book so I can find repeaters for my ham radio. I can utilize it as a communication tool. I can use it as a light. So I just keep a cord attached to a battery that is only for emergency use in my vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so I don't touch it. If it's not an emergency, I don't use it. So I know that it's there. I mean, it's one of the things that gets a problem for me and my family. And it's like, oh, you got a battery? Yeah, I got a battery. No, you can't use that one, though. That's an emergency. And this is not an emergency. And so deal with it.
Life with Craig.
You should have brought your cord. But in all seriousness, I want to know that it is there because it is a useful tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Good. Hydration.
Hydration is, simply put, what your geography can handle. You know, I ran a vending business for a long time, for about 3 years, and you know, frozen sodas and waters and stuff are a problem in a vehicle. So you need to take the necessary steps to be able to have water, or to be able to water that might be frozen to melt it so you can get to it. And another thing you can do is put water in a cooler without ice, because the cooler is an insulator. Fancy that. If you have, it's pretty interesting because I do this when it's cold. I have an insulated bottle that I keep in an insulated cooler. And so I've always got water in the vehicle, always. And it can't freeze because it's going through, you know, two big series of insulators. It never freezes. It didn't freeze last week and got down to, you know, or 2 weeks ago here, and it got down to 20 below with wind chill. It never froze.
That's a really good point. That's a great idea, actually.
I'm like that, David.
I know for me, I have, I carry two clean canteens, uninsulated, and they're 1 liter versions. And I carry those in my everyday carry pack. And whenever I get in my vehicle, the pack goes with me. And then I have a small water filtration device. And unless I'm going somewhere that I can't walk home in half a day or a day, I will make other provisions. But if you're traveling too, your water's probably not going to freeze. So if you're doing a big travel, definitely take the water that you are possibly going to need. Anything else on water?
No, I think I'm good on that.
Hygiene. This was kind of like your secret little thing you threw in there. Hygiene and a vehicle emergency. Why do we need to think about that?
The biggest thing is you got to poo and pee. Everybody does. It's a natural thing. And if you do that inside of a vehicle, then you've got it in there with you. So if you can exit the vehicle, do that. If you can't, then have something that you can put it in until you can get away from it. Even Ziploc bags or garbage bags. Another easy thing to do is, you know, people store diapers in things, and they're doing that for the same reason, to get the odor and the problems that come from feces out of the vehicle. So you can wrap it up, close it up. I've taken two in the last year. Even in my hammock, I'll take the regular bottle that you might use in a hospital to use the bathroom in from the bed. I take one of those in my hammock with me. It's got a little handle that hangs on the ridgeline. I keep it with me, and I can use the bathroom that way. Same thing for the vehicle. Women that might have an issue with being able to urinate without getting in an awkward position in the vehicle, they make a thing called a she-wee that is basically a funnel that a female can urinate into, and it has a funnel that you can direct that flow into some other container to remove it from the car.
Craig, I do not know what this, explain to me what this hospital bottle thing is.
Dude, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I just can't think of the name of it.
I don't know.
Hold on. I don't
have one of those.
Yes, you've seen them. You know exactly what I'm talking about. They're just called a portable urinal on the internets.
Oh, okay.
You know when you're in the hospital, have you ever seen anybody in the hospital, David, where they got the little bottle next to them?
Oh, okay. Yep.
Bruh. Yeah.
Dude, I just use the old school. Oh, I shouldn't say this. Cheaper option for the cheapskate survivalists out there is a old school 1 liter Gatorade bottle. Just make sure that you get the wide mouth.
Okay. So how much does a bottle of Gatorade cost?
$2 for $2. I don't know.
Does the top glow in the dark? Boom, roasted. $1.50 for a urinal off Amazon. Come on, David.
Really?
Don't give me this.
All right. It's going to be in the list, man.
I'm going to save some money stuff. Come on, man.
I had no idea. All right.
Yeah, you can get them for a couple bucks.
We never had this conversation before, Craig.
It's new, dude. It's not like we sit around talking about peeing and crap like that. No pun intended.
Okay. All right. I swore myself off of Amazon buying stuff for a week, but. I will.
I know you better than that. You're going to get on there and get the $12 one. I know good and well you are. Don't give me that nonsense. You use a Gatorade bottle, but you got 25, 22 rifles. As if you've got 25 arms. Oh my gosh. You crack me up.
Oh man. You crack me up. All right. So everybody else is laughing now too. Craig, what else?
Man, I think that's enough, homie. If they need more than that, then they need to email you, and then we'll get back on and talk about more. But that, you know, in all seriousness, we can go down such a rabbit hole, and people get overwhelmed, and they won't get this stuff. But I think with what we've gone here today, if people are writing notes for a checklist, then they got a really fantastic set of stuff to put in their vehicle. And it won't take up much space either.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. So for anybody interested in who have not taken notes, much to the chagrin of Mr. Craig Cottle, I will help you out and make sure that the notes for the show go up on ultimatesurvivaltips.com, podcast tab, show notes, blog, and you can grab them there. Craig, come on, bring it, man. two or three things people really need to take away from this.
Get the NOCO. Yeah, no joke about it. Get the NOCO. Get something for thermal regulation and get something for signaling. You'll be all right. You're not going to be out there that long. So get all that stuff and put it in your car.
Yep. Can I throw in one more thing? Get a survival kit.
Yeah, I mean.
Is that okay?
In my mind, a thermal regulation is two or three things, and that would include a survival kit.
Okay.
Cool. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, my friend. So how can folks find you?
Oh, me, naturereliance.org is my website, naturereliance.org, blog, all my social media contacts, my in-person courses, my online membership. I'm on all the social medias as Nature Reliance, so you can check us out there. Happy to help you. We teach a lot of in-person classes, online classes, and happy to help anybody any way we can. Thanks for having me on.
Dude, you're knocking it out of the park on YouTube Shorts, too.
Man, I don't know about you. I don't know if we should talk about it on here, but that stuff drives me crazy, man. I hate that crap. I do it. I do it because it gets eyes on. It makes people come to a podcast like this and listen to where I can actually help people. But
it's
just part of the animal that has to be done. We went through all that paperwork for monetizing all that crap today, and it's mind-numbing.
Yep. Yeah, man. So people can find... Just go through like two or three classes you got coming up this year. I know you do online stuff now, so get into that. You can do it anywhere, anytime, from wherever you are. But how about some live training? Just share with people what they
need. Yeah, if you go to classes on our website, you do have that online membership you just mentioned. And then the in-person classes, the ones that are most popular are Wilderness Survival Level 1, Scout Tracker, and Land Navigation. Though, if you get all three of those classes under your belt, you're going to be really well prepared to take care of yourself, be more self-reliant on any trip you go to the outdoors in particular, and in general, just for disaster readiness. So all of those have, you know, a component in them about just being simply ready. So that's our biggies. Now, we also teach nature immersion. I'm a master naturalist too, bushcrafting and campfire cooking is a class we're adding this year. We got all kinds of new stuff coming. Nice. And, so yeah, got a cadre of instructors that help now. We've got 12 different instructors that are helping teach in different areas of what it is we do at Nature Reliance School. So yeah, it's going to be a big year. Looking forward to it.
Nice. All right, Craig, name one class that I need to be in this year.
Oh man. Nature immersion, dude.
Really?
That would be a good one for you to bring Karen to as well. I mean, it's so the class is taught by Eric Comley and Patrick and myself, and all of us are master naturalists. Those two guys are 4-H extension agents here in the state, and super good guys. They're just, you know, they're NRS people at heart. Basically, it's forest ecology, aquatic invertebrates, tree identification, tracks, and everything nature. And then we try to find practical applications for that inside of survival and bushcraft as well. But there's a healthy dose of just appreciation of nature and enjoying being outside.
Nice. Sign me up. I'll talk to Karen.
Okay.
Nature sounds good, bro. All right. So naturereliance.org. Craig Cottle. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
All right, my friends, before we head out of here, don't forget to go check out my new Pack One knife over at our mothership, ultimatesurvivaltips.com. And while you're there, prep up your vehicles, bug out, and go bag with my tiny survival first aid guides and my pocket survival kits. And don't forget to use code SURVIVALSHOW25 for 25% off guides, gear, and kits for the next 7 days for you, our faithful Survival Show podcast listeners at ultimatesurvivaltips.com. And don't forget to grab your copy of the PDF show notes with Go Bag, EDC, and Vehicle Emergency Kit checklists with links to the gear Craig and I use and discussed on this podcast over at ultimatesurvivaltips.com. Just click the podcast link at the top of the page and scroll down to show notes. And last but not least, help us spread the word by paying it forward and sending a podcast link to the ones you care about so that you can help them get prepared too. All right, I think that's about it. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on the Survival Show podcast. Until then, keep it simple, be positive, and stay sharp.